As usually happens on these kind of things, I've got more content today than I know what to do with. I think both interviews are very interesting. We have Jim O'Loughlin, who is president of the Blind Sailors Association from Houston, Texas. And we have Jay Leventhal from Access World Magazine, and both of them ran along, so we're going to try to hurry and get them both in. I'm Phil Parr. Our little show is called Blind Like Me, and we hope you will enjoy it and gain some insight from these interviews, all right? We are visiting today with a gentleman named Jim O'Loughlin, and you were in Houston, is that right?
That's correct.
And your name is actually is not Loughlin with an O in front of it. I mean, it is. O is not a middle initial for you.
That's correct, yeah.
It
yeah.
is O. That doesn't stand for Othel or some other silly
name. No, nothing that strange.
O'Loughlin, that's an unusual kind of a name. I guess you said it was Irish, an Irish?
Yeah, we date back. The whole ancestry dates all the way back to Ireland, and both, you know, my middle initial is P, which stands for Parker, which is also Irish. So we are, I guess, about as close to being 100% Irish as you can be.
As possible.
As possible without the accent, yes.
And you have no accent. I hear detect none whatsoever other than that good old Texas accent that you and I both have.
Well, I have a little bit of an accent because I'm basically Canadian. I was born in Canada, but I've lived most of my life in the States. And so there are certain words that some people pick up, for example, like the word out, you know, out, house, about, things like that. And a lot of people go, wait a minute, you're not from around here, are you? So there's a small accent, but you have to really be one of those people that really pay attention to that.
When you hear that, you think of Peter Jennings, though, immediately, don't you? You know, because that's the way he pronounces out and about.
That's correct, yeah.
I love him to death.
He's Canadian also.
He is, and a fine journalist, and a fellow fine, I think it would be a fine gentleman if he were here to visit with us.
Yeah, I'd like to meet him. He seems like a very nice guy.
Now, you're totally blind?
No.
How much vision do you have?
I have quite good peripheral vision. I have no central vision. Is probably the simplest way to put it. So in other words, what I try to tell people is that I can see everything generally quite well, but don't ask me to thread a needle or like reading or things like that. Close up work, forget it. I can't do it.
But you don't need a travel assistant to get around like a cane or a dog or any of that sort of thing. You don't need that.
I don't need it. I have a cane. I went through all the mobility training and things like that, and I have a cane which I carry with me specifically for nighttime. During the day, I'm usually pretty good, but at nighttime, you know, if you're someplace where it's kind of dark and I'm not familiar with, you betcha I get that cane out and I use it.
And so you actually don't see nearly as well at night as you do in the full daylight.
That's correct. Yeah, the brighter the light, the better I'm off.
So when you go to a restaurant, you look for that table by the window, right? Do you want to?
I try to, but undoubtedly they always stick me at the darkest table they can find. I don't know why, but it's just the way that works.
I've got a friend who just won't have it. He'll make them move him. He'll make them put him in a bright place. Now, were you born with this condition, or how did this happen to you?
The underlying condition, which is called, I'll give you the long term, then I'll give you the short term.
Okay.
The actual disease is called pseudoxanthoma elasticum, which the short version is just PXE. Basically, it's a genetic disease. It lies quite dormant for most of your life, other than we end up with what we like to call sort of chicken skin. Around our necks, our skin gets a little rough, and that's usually a sign of PXE. But as far as affecting the vision goes, it usually waits till late 30s, early 40s, and some people it waits till 60s and 70s.
Okay, so you had a quote-unquote normal childhood in that you didn't realize there was going to be a vision thing someday.
That's correct. I mean, I think that when I first got diagnosed with the PXE, they said, you know, this could cause some vision problems down the road. But, you know, when I was a teenager, who, you know,
who cares?
That sort of rolled right off like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was certainly not something you dwelt on as a teenager, I'm sure.
No, no, I never gave it any thought.
You know? So you went to high school? Where?
Yeah, I went to high school here in Houston.
Just a plain old Milby, or one of the regular public high schools?
Yeah, I went to Memorial Senior High School in Houston, and then I went to college up at Sam Houston State University in Huntsville.
Oh, is that right? What years?
Oh boy, you're really going to try to make me think of this stuff.
Yeah, the reason I asked is my wife went to Sam Houston also.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, she's an attorney. She got her journalism degree. She really liked the journalism department there.
Uh huh.
And she would have been there, I guess, late 70s. She's 46, I think. She was there late 70s.
That would have been about right, because, let's see, I got out of high school about 75, so I was probably in college 76 to 80.
That'll be darn. It is a small world now, isn't it?
Yeah. What was your wife's maiden name?
She kept her maiden name. Her name is Lou Ann Tatum. T-A-T-U-M is her last name. Yeah. She wrote for the paper up there and was quite active in the journalism department.
Oh.
But anyway, so you went to Sam Houston and got yourself a degree in what?
I got a degree in accounting.
Oh, really?
And yeah. And, of course, these days I dismiss that. But, I got a degree in accounting and then went to work in the oil and gas field as what they called a revenue accountant.
Mm-hmm.
And did that for about 10 years or so.
Well, why do you say that you these days you dismiss that? I don't understand you.
Well, accounting is great for some people, but after 10 years of it, I got tired of it. And I changed
careers. Okay. All right. I got you.
It's a long story. So now I just pretend like the accounting career never existed.
Never happened, huh?
Never happened.
Well, and so at some point in time, I suppose you realized that you couldn't see as well as you once could. Tell me that story.
Well, that didn't happen until just a few years ago. As a matter of fact, in 1997 is when the first visual impairment happened, the first retinal bleed, which took away a good part of the vision in the left eye. It was very close to the center of the eye or the macula, but it didn't really touch it. But you know, when I would look like over to the left or something like that, there would, of course, would be a gray area where I couldn't see anything.
And that dawned on you one day that that was happening, I suppose. Because up until then, you were driving your car and leading what they would call a normal sighted person's life.
You bet, yeah. And, up till that point, you know, I had no clue that this was going to happen.
Yeah.
It was just one of those things that overnight it happened and
you woke up one day and you couldn't see as well as you could, and you went to a doctor and said, "Doc, what is going on, or what?"
Yeah, basically, one day I was out in the yard, and for whatever reason, I was scratching the right eye, so I had it closed, and I was looking out at the tree, and suddenly the tree was going off at right angles.
Oh.
You know, I said, "This can't be right," and so charged off to see my ophthalmologist, and he said, "Well," he says, "I think you should go see a retinal specialist," and I did, and he said, "Oh, well," he says, "you've got a retinal bleed going on, and we need to treat it."
And I'm talking now. We need to treat it, probably.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, 20 minutes later, I'm sitting in that chair, and he's got that little laser gun pointed, and he's just burning holes in my eye, you know, to seal up the bleeding.
Oh man!
And when I left, it was like, okay, this is a little bit different, but it wasn't that bad. And
yeah.
I went on for about another year working.
You drove yourself home from that appointment.
Yeah, yeah.
That's wild. And you thought, well, there's nothing to this. This happened. It won't. It's not really going to affect me too much.
Yeah, really. That's about the way I looked at it. I thought, okay. I said, all right, when I look off to the left, I'm going to have a little problem. But
yeah.
You know, beyond that, hey, this isn't that bad.
Not bad.
And
little did you know.
Yeah, little did I know that the worst was only around the corner. And
we're laughing about it now. That I can't imagine. I was born this way, so I can't imagine that happening to me. because I've always been blind, and it's just second nature to me. I know, you know, I know all about it. People say, how do you do that? Well, I've been doing it 60 years. Of course I know how to do it.
Yeah. But
to have this happen to a guy who is leading a, we keep saying normal, or just an average everyday life, must have been pretty traumatic.
Well, you know, again, when the left eye got afflicted, it was like, okay, a little bit of change, but you know, I was still working, and at that point, mm-hmm. I had changed careers, and I was now in the electronics field, and actually working in a hospital with computers, and you know, and I was one of those guys that was always up there running cable around and stuff like that. And then in 98, about a year later after the first one, the right eye went.
Oh.
And it had a bleed, and that was the one that really changed, you know, the life.
Did your mind ever hearken back to being a child and them telling you that someday this may affect you? Did you think of that? Did that cross your mind ever?
I think that when it started, yeah. Absolutely. I remember sitting in the doctor's office and him saying, you know, it could affect your eyesight at some point in time. But, you know, again, at that age,
who cares? Yeah, okay. And so the right eye, hemorrhaged or began bleeding, and go ahead.
That's correct. I went to see, by this time after the left eye went, then I was really doing a lot of research on PXE and trying to find out, you know, what could be done and things like this. So I traveled down to Florida to supposedly see a PXE specialist. I saw countless retinologists and finally settled on a guy here in Houston. And he was very aggressive with his treatments. We talked about the traditional laser, but he said, you know, he says, that's so destructive. And there was a procedure called a submacular surgery, which is basically what they actually did, is they went into the eye, and if you can imagine, with a very small pair of tweezers, would try to remove that that blood clot. Because basically what was happening is, of course, when you bleed, it tries to scab over, and that's what really steals the vision.
No, I can't imagine. With a little pair of tweezers.
Pretty much. I mean, I was asleep through it all, but yeah, that's, they make a little incision, and he reaches in there, and he pulls out this scar tissue.
It's painful thinking about it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I tell you, the worst part of it is that they put after the procedure, they put a little gas bubble in there, and you've got to lie on your stomach with your head down for up to 10 days. Talk about miserable.
For up to 10 days?
Yeah.
Get out of town.
No,
so you did that.
I'm serious. I mean, some people, that bubble would absorb faster, but me, 10 days.
And
I ran the full 10 days.
They would come and look at you and say, no, you turn back on your stomach, big boy. This is the way you do, you know. God almighty.
Well, no, actually, it's a procedure that you came home. It was a day procedure. But, you know, through those 10 days, I think I would see the doctor about every third day or so. And they'd say, yeah, that bubble's still there. And I go, yeah, I know.
But you were at home doing this.
Correct.
Laying on your stomach. You weren't in a hospital. You were at home.
No.
What sort of did they give you a hospital bed to do this on, or how did you?
No. They said take a pillow and, you know, wad it up and sort of stick it, you know, right there on your chest, and you know, and that's the way you lie.
My heavens.
You know, what I did is I sort of just hung my head over the edge of the bed. Now, whatever I could find, however I could find a comfortable position, that's what I would do.
But you couldn't read, because you couldn't see to read.
That's correct.
You couldn't watch television, you couldn't watch TV, the way your head was, and we're talking laying on your stomach with your eyes were looking at the floor.
Yes.
You couldn't do anything except lay there and maybe listen to music. You could do that, but I had a little operation, had a breathing tube down my nose and one in my mouth for several days, and I finally told him, you'll take this out or I'm leaving, folks. This is it. I've had enough of this. You can't treat me like this. Well, she said, Mr. Parr, please don't, you know. I can't imagine it, but you went through that, and this was to possibly keep some vision for you, or what was that?
That's
what were they thinking?
Yeah, absolutely. The theory was that is that if you could remove this membrane or this scar tissue,
yeah,
then the cells under that would have their normal function because,
yeah,
you know, to put it simply, if you ever thought of a like a driveway that has cracks in it and weeds are growing up through the cracks and mm-hmm. things like that, that's exactly what was happening to the eye. And so the theory was if you remove this membrane, then you should really regain, you know, a good part of the vision back. And, you know, oddly enough, at first, that's the way it went. I mean, prior to the procedure, the vision was like 20, I think I was like at 2200. And within, I'd say, about 15 days, I was down to 2100. And within a month, I was down to about 2040. I mean, it actually got to the point where I was driving again.
Well, you were driving again after not being able to drive.
That's correct.
All right, we're about 15 minutes in, Jim. Let's take a little short break and be back with more Blind Like Me in just a second. Today with Jim O'Loughlin from Houston, Texas, and we're going to talk about sailing in a minute, but we got into your eye thing, and so you did we talked a minute ago, but you did the 10 days laying on your stomach, and it actually helped, so it was worthwhile, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, if they give me my vision back, I'd lay on my stomach 20 days with my head.
I would, too.
I'd do it again. I'd do it right now.
Yeah. I agree. I would do it, too.
But if it hadn't worked, I would have been really angry, you know.
Well, it was a gamble, you know,
yeah.
And he told me up front, he said, you know, this is a rather aggressive treatment, but it's, you know, rather than destroying the tissue, this gave you the best chance of recovering vision.
Okay.
So I was all for it.
And it worked.
It worked for a period of about 5 or 6 months, and then the vision just started to decline again.
I might even do a 10-day thing on my stomach for 6 months. I might even do that. I don't know if I would or not, but I might.
You know, I would do it again. I would.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had that surgery numerous times now, you know, because I've had recurring bleeds.
So you've done it several times.
Yeah, I've done it several times, but we've never had the good results that we did the first time. You know, the eye, the cells just, as time goes by, they just atrophy and things like that. And it just isn't, you know, regardless
of
the nature of the disease, it's run its course and...
Yeah.
The central vision is gone.
Now we are at a point that you're no longer attempting to gain any more vision. You've got what you got, and that's the way it is.
That's correct.
That's where we are now.
Yeah.
Is it going to deteriorate more, do you know?
Well, they say no, you know, but...
yeah.
You know, doctors can't be totally sure, but basically they say that PXE will only take the peripheral, only take the central vision and leave the peripheral vision.
So you got that?
I got that.
Okay. Had you married and had children at this point in your life?
I'm one of those single bachelors that, you know, has never really been tied down and always sort of free to up and go wherever I want to go.
Yeah.
So that, in some regards, was even tougher for me because, you know, I don't really have the support of a wife and things like that. So that's kind of hampered a lot of my activities here and there.
Yeah, but then no one else suffered with you. I'm sure you've thought of it all sorts of ways, and every way there is to think of it. There was no one. There were no children. There was no one. There was no one but you. I mean, this was a personal thing with you.
Right.
You had no one to bring along, but then it would be tough. I don't know how. I never would have made it without my wife. Bless her heart. I never would have made it without her. Anyway, so this was 1998, and so you obviously stopped your job as a cable puller.
That's correct. In 1998, I had to resign from the hospital. I just told them I couldn't do the job anymore.
Hmm.
So I mean, they were all very understanding and stuff, and. But, you know, at that point, quite honestly, and I think they tried to work with me, they said, well, Jim, what can we do to help you? And
mm-hmm.
You know, sadly, at that point, it was just, I figured life was over. You know, I said, this is it.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting to die now.
But no.
Yeah, but I hung in there.
But no, that's not true. Did you? And I ask you this for a reason. We've talked to several people who have faced a similar thing in their lives as you have. Did you go for some counseling? Did they offer that to you, commission or anybody?
I did deal with the state commission for a little bit. I never really went to any support groups or anything like that.
Yeah.
What I did find is that through the internet, I found some other people. Really, I've found many all over the world that have the same disease.
Yeah.
And so I've corresponded with them and still do. So I had that support group because, you know, they're mm-hmm. yeah, I've been there, done that. We know exactly what you feel.
Yeah. Until I got into this, all I knew were blind people that I'd gone to school with that had started out that way. I didn't realize how many people there are who lose their eyesight sometime in actually, as you did, in the prime of their lives. There should be more support groups, I think, and maybe we can get that. So you this was 1998. You came home and you did a lot of self soul searching and thinking, and you finally realized, obviously, one day, well, hell, I got this to deal with. I might as well get on with my life.
Pretty much, yeah. That sums it up quite well.
It's now you say you,
like, you know, you get to the point where, like, okay, research isn't to the point where they're going to cure me yet. I can't wait for that. I've got to move on.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're looking at the last generation of blind people. 20 years from now, they'll have a cure for what happened to you.
I sure hope so.
I would very definitely think so. So this happened. This is recent to you. This is 5 years ago.
That's correct.
Okay, what did you decide you wanted to do, or you could do? Are you living by yourself, trying to cook for yourself, trying to do everything for yourself?
Yeah. I have a house and I live alone, and I you know, found little tricks for cooking and things like that, and the other thing that I think that really happens to a lot of people that lose the vision the way I do. And I never believed this at first when they said, oh, your peripheral vision will take over. You'll be surprised at what you can do.
Yeah.
I said, no way. Not going to happen.
Yeah.
But I'm here to say that that's true.
Sure it is.
You do adjust somewhat. And, so I just sort of slowly made that progression, you know, day by day, just kept going forward.
But you haven't since then. Have you found a job? You found employment or not?
No, I tried for a while. I tried to work with the state commission on that, and they said, well, you know, we can get you a job with the IRS in accounting. And I said, forget it. So done accounting, been there, done it.
Already
no
done that. No way. Yeah.
And but it was just, it just didn't work out. We just really couldn't find anything. I wanted to stay in the technical field. And there was a guy here in Houston that trained people on computers and things like that. I can't remember his name now, but I believe that he had to close his office here, and he moved way up north, probably 50, 60 miles from me. And so transportation needs it. I said, can't do it. You know, I
so,
just can't get up there.
Were you pretty computer savvy before you lost your eyesight? I mean, was that had that become your field of choice?
Yeah, that was my field of choice, and I consider myself pretty computer savvy. It's a continual learning process.
Sure.
I'm pretty good, I'd say.
Yeah, Microsoft makes sure it's a continual learning process, don't they?
Yes, they do.
They're not going to let us know all there is to know. Well, I'm sure you'll find something. There's plenty of opportunities for blind people who have good computer skills and who know computers. Do you have to use JAWS or screen reader? Can you see well enough to see a screen?
I use a software called Zoom Text.
Okay, I know about Zoom Text. And
yeah.
So it enlarges it enough that you can...
That's correct.
Yeah.
And I still try to do the reading myself. I mean, the Zoom Text will read to you.
Yeah.
And sometimes that is appropriate, but I still try to do most of it, you know, visually. I still try to use my vision.
I didn't realize I didn't realize Zoom Text had a speech engine. It does. Okay.
It does.
So
there are various versions of Zoom Text, and they continue to develop the speech, and it works pretty well. I mean, you know, it's It's not perfect, but it works pretty darn well.
All right. If you want to, you'll find something, because there's plenty of opportunity for blind people, even teaching other blind people computers. That's quite a thing now. So were you're, as we mentioned, I don't know if we mentioned this or not, that you're president of the, is it National Blind Sailors? Is it or Texas, or what is it?
It's the Foundation for Texas Blind Sailors.
The Foundation for Texas Blind Sailors. Did you have any interest in sailing before you lost your eyesight?
Oh yeah, I've been a boater and a sailor for years. I used to sail catamarans and sail on big boats and things like that. So I'm a real water enthusiast all along.
Mm-hmm.
I used to do the scuba diving thing, the whole works. So, obviously when the vision went away, or when I became legally blind,
mm-hmm.
I, really thought that's it.
You'll never be able to do this again, right?
Right. I'll never be able to do this again.
Ah, yes. Well, but wrong.
But wrong. And I have to sort of plug a guy which you may have heard of, a fellow by the name of Vince Morvillo, who is down here in the Clear Lake in Houston. And he is a blind sailor, and he's competed worldwide in all sorts of blind regattas and things like that. And I knew about Vince, and so when I finally decided to sort of get out from under the covers, pull my head out,
uh-huh.
I contacted Vince, and Vince, we talked about it, and he had this goal of putting together this team to go compete in the world championship.
Which he did.
He's competed in several of them, but he actually wanted to put together a team, and the team would consist of three boats, or three boat teams, I should say. With the categories of blindness from what they call a B1, which is total darkness.
Yeah.
A B2 is light perception, and then the B3s are people like me.
And you were on the B3 boat, and you went to New Zealand? Where did you?
No, this is the last one was in September of last year, 2002, and it was in Italy.
Did Nancy Davis go with you?
Yes, Nancy. Nancy is one of our team members.
Nancy has done this show with me.
She's a great gal.
She is a wonderful, just an inspiring lady. I just loved her.
Yeah.
I was thinking the next time I'm down there in that area, which I have friends that live. She lives down around Clear Lake. I'm gonna go have a dinner to talk with Nancy. I was inspired by what she did after she lost her vision.
She's a great gal. She's enthusiastic about it, and
So you were part of that team that went to Italy and took, I think you folks took second place, didn't you?
Nancy's boat, or her boat team, the B2 team, did.
Yeah.
They took second place.
Yeah.
I did not fare as well. I was down
really?
There in fifth place.
Fifth place.
But, it was the first time for our boat. Nancy, of course, sailed with Vince, and Vince, has lots and lots of experience.
I have tried a couple times. Vince and I have tried to hook up a couple times and have just missed each other. I want to talk with him. I think he'd make a really interesting interview for this show.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do that. But he was busy all summer. I called him one time. He said, "Phil, I'd like to talk to you, but I'm selling the yacht right now. I don't have time to, that's what he does. He has a company that sells yachts.
That's correct.
To sighted people.
That's correct.
Which just knocks me out. We need to get together, and we will eventually.
Vince is another great guy, and it really is amusing to watch him sell a boat, because you kind of go, how can you sell this boat when you can't see it?
Yeah.
And he sells them to sighted people, which is even more interesting. I mean, if I were a sighted person, would I buy a boat from a blind guy? Probably not.
I don't know whether I would or not. But see, that opens up all kinds of things. I'm sure there are. I ran across yesterday a blind astronomer.
Really?
That I'm going to do an interview with Monday. He works for the SETI Institute in California. So every time you think, well, nobody blind is doing that, you run across somebody who is. So this opens up, could a blind person, surely there's a used car salesman that's blind somewhere. And surely,
why not?
Why not? If Vince can do this, yes. And surely there's a real estate guy who goes and looks at all the houses, knows them from front to back, and surely there's a real estate guy that's selling. You know there is.
Yeah.
Maybe he's listening, or she, and they'll call me.
Yeah, I hope so.
Okay.
Well,
so,
of course, we always accuse Vince that we think he can see more than he tells us.
Oh, you think he may be fudging a little?
We think he is.
No, he's not. I never have met him, but I know lots of people who know him, and I think he's probably as blind as I am, isn't he?
No, I think Vince is a B2, so I think he has light perception.
Does he have light perception?
Yeah.
Well, that wouldn't help much.
It's amazing because, you know, I can be standing someplace and not say a word, and Vince walks up to me and he goes, "Hey, Jim." And I'm thinking, how the heck did you know it was me? I don't know, but Vince is a great guy.
Maybe by some chemistry that you give off. I need to meet this man. That's obvious.
Yeah.
And so you got into this. You got into this sailing thing. Do you own a sailboat? I guess you rent one or what?
I don't presently own one. What our group really has to do is we have to count on volunteers, people that have boats.
Uh-huh.
That want to be involved and help us.
Okay.
Take us sailing and things like that. When we went to Italy, we were just kind of like a club. And it was this year that I actually decided to go ahead and turn the Texas Line Sailors into a corporation. We're a nonprofit group and all that stuff.
Oh, you're 501c3. You got done. So that if someone wanted to donate a boat, you could take it and they could take it as a write-off.
Sure. Sure.
Wow.
But, you know, I just really wanted to give this group some true legitimacy, so to speak, and use it as a vehicle to promote, obviously, sailing for the blind or the vision impaired and things like that. And just get people, you know, get them active. Say, come on, guys. I mean, this can be done. It is different, and you have to rely on your sighted volunteers, but it is doable.
I never thought about it. It never dawned on me that blind people did that until I talked to my friend Dale Campbell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dale joined our group this year. He was a new one that we found, and he's very enthusiastic. I think he was just out sailing on Monday for the first time.
Well, he's going to be an asset to any group he joins, I can tell you.
I think so. He's got the enthusiasm, and he's working with a great guy. His sighted guy is going to be a fellow by the name of Javier, and Javier has sailed with Vince over the years. And, you know, it is very good at communicating and instructing, or he will be very good with instructing Dale on the things that he needs to do on the boat. And that's what we need. We need people that are good communicators and, you know, the willingness and the patience, of course, you know, because it's not easy. And as I say, it is different, but it is doable.
And it's nice if you can find sighted people that are willing to help that have a boat.
Absolutely. I mean, that is one of our problems.
Yeah.
Is that, number one, we have to have the boats.
Yeah.
There really isn't a problem finding volunteers. There are many people that want to help, but we got to find the boats.
Yeah.
That's kind of the difficult part.
Well, with your status, how long have you had this nonprofit thing?
We just got the 501c status back in August, so we're very, very new.
I bet a year from now you'll have a boat or you'll have access to one all the time. There are all kinds of people who I think will probably want to help, or maybe even philanthropic organizations that will want to get involved in this
well,
thing.
Well, I hope so. I mean, you know, right now the thing that I'm trying to get accomplished is get the word out.
Yeah.
Let people know that the group exists. We do have access to several boats from time to time. Vince, of course, believe it or not, he has several boats himself. So we get to use one of his boats.
Yeah, I guess he would have, wouldn't he?
Yeah. I think at one time Vince probably had 6 or 7 boats. I think he's down to 2 now. But, you know, the key is to get the word out. Number one, you know, find volunteers. And we're still always looking for more blind people.
Yeah.
You know, we need more blind people. I want to get them involved. Right now in the early stages, it's just like, hey, we're here, we exist, this is what we're trying to accomplish, and, you know, if you're interested and you want to volunteer, you want to help, or you know a blind person that you think might be interested, put them in touch with me.
Yeah.
And I'll talk to them.
All right, well, I tell you what let's do. Let's take a short break. We'll come back and give all the pertinent information on how to get involved with Texas Blind Sailors, okay?
Okay.
Back with more of our Blind Like Me show in just a sec. and we're visiting with Jim O'Loughlin, who is president. Give me the name. Is Texas Blind Sailors Association? Is that right?
Foundation for the Texas Blind Sailors.
Foundation for the Texas Blind Sailors. I need to tuck that in my memory up there. And this is a newly formed organization, and of which you are the president.
That's correct.
And we're looking for people with boats that want to help, people, sighted people that want to help, but also we're looking for blind people who think they might be interested in this sort of thing. Of course, we're limiting ourselves because we're just talking about Texas, and I guess the Gulf Coast down there.
Well, initially, yes, but there are groups. I believe there are clubs and there are other organizations all around the United States and all over the world that do the same thing. But, I mean, all I can offer is really Texas and the Houston Gulf Coast area.
Okay. We'll get to the information in just a minute. Is there another big one of these trips planned to go compete? Again, is that in the offing? Is that coming up?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There are actually two. There will be the U.S. National Blind Sailing Championships next August, which is held up in Newport, Rhode Island.
The U.S. National Blind Sailing Championship, which means there are many other clubs.
Oh, yeah. Oddly enough, in the Northeast, Boston, there's some really excellent sailors up there, some blind guys. Just to name a couple of them, there's Matt Chow, there's a fellow by the name of Inky. I don't know what his last name is, but he's quite a character. And these guys are excellent. I mean, they've been doing this competitively longer than I have, so they usually just beat the pants off of me. But then after the Nationals, which are, of course, held every year, then you have the Blind World Sailing Championships, which come around every 3 years, and the next ones are to be held in New Zealand in 2005.
And there are already plans afoot to go, I'm sure.
We're working on it. We've got to get the teams together, and then we've got to raise the money to get us there.
So this national blind sailing thing comes up when?
It comes up every year, and it's usually around August 20th or so of each year.
So we've done it for this year. It's happened.
It's already over. We sadly did not get to go up there to compete.
Really?
Yeah, well, we didn't have the money, and my sighted guide had just had knee surgery, so he wasn't really moving around. So regretfully, we were not able to participate in that one.
Did I guess Vince went, right? Did he?
No, Vince is, he's getting married this year. He was building a new house.
And busy making a living, I guess, also.
That's right.
Yeah, selling yachts and things. If someone is, say someone from North Dakota or some other place that isn't Texas wants to know about their closest, what I'm trying to ask is, do you have a list of these clubs that you can put somebody in touch with?
I don't have a list, so to speak, but I do have some contacts around. I could probably get them the information. Yeah.
Okay.
I could probably find out if there is an organization near them.
Good deal. That's what we want to know. All right, give us your email address, your mailing address, whatever you want, however you want to be contacted.
All right. Well, the Texas Blind Sailors, of course, has a website, which is www.texasblindsailors.org. It's a relatively easy one to remember.
Yeah, TexasBlindSailors.org, all one word, of course.
You got it.
Yeah.
My email address is jim@TexasBlindSailors.org. Or you can, I'd be more than happy to talk to people over the phone, and that phone number is 281-282-9449. And, of course, hey, if anybody wants to contribute money, they can call me. I can send them brochures out and give them the address and everything. Boy, I'll talk to anybody about this.
Yeah. And as we said a while ago, this is what's called a non-profit. People know them as non-profit, which means that if you give money, if you give a gift or something to this organization, it is tax deductible.
That's correct.
The government will let you deduct that from your I don't know exactly how that works, because I don't know much about tax law, but I know that, that if they give something to you, that it can be written off, as they say.
That's correct. Yeah. I mean, it depends upon your tax status and all those other things we don't really need to go into, but it does afford you the ability to take that deduction. That's correct.
Yeah, the government has said this is a nonprofit, worthy nonprofit organization, and so you may give them gifts and you may deduct them, because actually what the government is saying is we are going to help support these people. So anybody who had a gift they want to give, and we're not asking for $10 contributions. That's not the point. The point is if you know of some organization that might like to get involved, we'll be sure and contact Jim here, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we need sponsors, obviously. Corporations would be great. Personal donations. And, you know, it doesn't matter. I mean, it can be $5. It can be $1. It doesn't matter. Every little bit helps.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that I would like to try to tell people, because I know a lot of people are very skitterish about charities, and rightfully so, but, I mean, we are completely volunteers, so none of the directors or officers get any compensation whatsoever. So all contributions, you can be assured, are going to go directly to benefit the blind sailors.
Yeah, and your activities are all public also, so you know, anybody who wants to check up on you can easily do that. All right, let's run through your contact information again, if you don't mind.
Sure. It's you can get us on the internet at www.texasblindsailors.org. My email address is jim@texasblindsailors.org. And the phone number where I can be reached at is area code 281-282-9449.
All right. But texasblindsailors.org is certainly easy enough to remember, and your phone number would be on that website
The website is still being updated, but my email address is on there, and I will actually have, hopefully, in the next week or so or a couple of weeks, the more information about the different ways to donate or contribute to the blind sailors. And so, again, all of my contact information will be on there once again.
Yeah, because this thing just got approved in August, and you're just getting it.
You betcha. We're still the newbies on the block.
The newbies. Well, we've applied for the same thing, so you won't be long.
you should get it. I mean,
we will. There's no question about it. So far, I'm paying all the bills, and I'm tired of it.
I know the feeling.
I guess you do. Well, listen.
I footed all the bills to get this thing up and going, and I'm not complaining about it. I mean, it's something that I want to do, and I want to get more people out there, and I think you and I discussed this briefly. It's I'm not only looking to educate the blind about this, but I also want to educate just the rest of the sighted world as to what we can accomplish.
Yeah.
And sort of say, hey, guys, I mean, you know, we're out here, you know, we're not hiding in the closets anymore, so to speak, which I think a lot of blind people do.
Many blind people do.
And just try to tell them, say, listen, you know, get us out there. We want to do these things. And we'll see what happens.
Well, you want to and you can, and you are what we're looking for with this little show is people who are handling blindness, who are able to deal with it and letting people who may not know as much about it as we do realize that you can live a good, fulfilled life as a blind person. It can be done. It is and sometimes more difficult, but it's not impossible to do.
That's absolutely correct. It does change your life, but and you have to accept that and move on. But yeah, you can do it.
And
you've got a great show. Vince has got a great business. Hopefully, we're going to become a household name in Texas here.
Hopefully, yes.
You know, so, I mean, it just things change, but it can be done.
It can. Jim, you've been a very nice guest, and I'm proud to have made your acquaintance and glad you agreed to come on our little show, and maybe we'll get the word out to a few people.
Well, I hope so. I look forward to it, and I thank you for having us on here. And when you do come down to see Nancy, I live very close to Nancy, so I hope to maybe also have a chance to have dinner with you, and even take you boating.
I've got you in my book, and I would do that. I would go boating with you, and I will, and we'll plan on that after the in the springtime. As I'm old and I get cold easy, so I'm not going out anywhere now.
And, well, we just take you out there in the summer when it's nice and hot.
That's what you'll end up doing here. I'll take enough whiskey with me to keep warm. There's always that. Thank you, Jim. We appreciate it, and I'll be visiting with you.
Thank you very much.
We are visiting with a gentleman named Jay Leventhal, who most of you probably already know is the editor and chief of Access World magazine. Did I get your title right?
Editor-in-chief, yeah.
Editor-in-chief. Ken, one of the reasons we're here is to talk about the fact that dialogue is fixing to become an internet magazine, or post it on the internet so that it's accessible to everyone. It has been a subscription publication up until now, something that people had to pay for. Let's do a little history of the magazine. Was it your idea? How did it come about?
Actually, you said dialogue. Access World.
Did I say dialogue?
Yeah.
That's foolish of me. It is Access World. I got dialogue on my mind. Access World. And how did Access World come to be, sir?
Paul Schrader was the person at the American Foundation for the Blind who was the original editor-in-chief of Access World. We received a couple of large grants from the DuPont Foundation and another source to start Access World. We've started publishing in January 2000 in five different formats: online, large print, braille, cassette, and ASCII disc.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul moved on to be AFB's Vice President of Governmental Relations in 2001, and I became editor-in-chief at that point. So we had started doing a lot of promotion for Access World in 1999, and it would have been nice to do a web-only magazine to begin with, but not enough blind people were online, we thought, so we decided to distribute in the other formats at that time.
But obviously you feel like they are now, that there are enough computer literate blind folks.
We do. There are so many listservs. There are so many people who've realized how much more the internet means to us than it means to sighted people, and it means a lot to them to begin with.
Yeah.
But they may not all be experts, and we've all been to difficult-to-use web pages, but there are thousands and thousands of people online, and we just haven't reached enough people by going to shows and advertising in other magazines. It's so difficult to reach blind people, and also the subscription fee was a barrier for some people. So we're removing that, and anything that's by subscription with a password on the internet cannot be found by search engines. So now people who don't even know about us will be able to say, let's see, where can we find a comparison of the Braille Note and the PacMate, or JAWS and Window Eyes? And they'll do a search on Google, and they'll find the Access World article.
Okay. Do you have any way of knowing what percentage of blind people have some computer knowledge?
No, it seems like almost every statistic related to blindness is difficult to get, because you can't just call households and find blind people. There are too few of us. So we have some general idea. It's like internet usage is somewhat lower among blind people than among sighted people. And, of course, another frustrating thing is that the companies that sell assistive technology are all small and privately owned and don't discuss the number of users that they have. If we were talking about IBM or AT&T, we could look in their annual reports and find out how many products they had sold, but you can't do that with Freedom Scientific and GW Micro and so on.
Mm-hmm. How many paid subscribers do you have now currently?
Just we have ballpark. Had a high of about 1,300, and when we announced this change in June, we stopped taking new subscriptions for 2004, so we're down under 1,000 now, and anyone who had a subscription that ran over into 2004 got a refund.
Yeah.
So, you know, we are expecting to do a large amount of advertising for this, announcing it on all kinds of listservs in as many publications as we can get into, and just putting out announcements when new issues are available will add to our current subscriber list. People can come to AFB's website and sign up to receive announcements, or they will be able to. They can't do that yet. They'll be able to sign up for announcements, to be emailed an announcement when a new issue comes out. And we have been sending out an email update. Access World is published every other month. Mm-hmm. So in the other 6 months, we send out Access World Extra, an email update with comments from readers and questions that we ask readers, and we publish the responses, short articles on things that are really usually it's current, like policy issues, that if we had a two-month lead time on something, the whole thing would change, like IDEA legislation and other bills working their way through Congress, copyright issues, conference reports, those kind of things.
Now, we get that automatically, the one that comes every other month.
Subscribers do, yes.
Yes, subscribers do. Will we still get that?
Yes, you will still get that, and other people will be able to sign up on our website to get that also. That is just email. But the reason that we're doing the magazine on our website and not mailing it out is that we do have charts. When we evaluate products, we compare the two products side by side, as well as writing an article about them. And we have pictures and captions, and of course we describe the pictures, and we also have advertising, and we describe the ads, but you can't put all of that into a text email message.
In other words, so this thing won't appear in my inbox. I'll have to go every other month and get it.
That's right. We will send out an announcement with the link, and you can just select the link, or online subscribers can do the same thing they've been doing, coming to the place they've been coming to, and we'll let you know where that is, and you'll be able to get.
But you will have to subscribe. I mean, you can't just John Doe can't go do it. You'll have to be able to go. You have to go and subscribe at the foundations.
No.
Okay.
It's going to be free.
I understand that, but would you have to have? Will I have to subscribe, or can I tell a sighted friend of mine about it, and he could go look at it?
You can tell a sighted friend about it. You could tell your employer about it, who wants to know how you can do that new job that you're getting promoted to. Speaking generically, of course.
Yeah. Okay.
It's confusing to use the word subscribe, but you'll be able to put your email address on a list to receive announcements.
Okay.
But you won't even have to fill out a form before you read the magazine. It'll just be open.
Okay. Quickly, what sort of mock-up would you have? I mean, how would you be able to go through the magazine?
You'll be able to read the various articles, product evaluations. We're going to have in January an evaluation of 4 digital talking book players. You'll be able to look at that. We'll have an article on employees who are visually impaired working at NASA. And you'll just be able to come to a table of contents page, see a list of the articles, choose the article that you want, and go in and read it. And once you're in the article, you'll be able to go from one article to the next article. You'll be able to mail each article to a friend who you think would be interested.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be able to get a Braille printer-ready version. You know, you've seen on a lot of websites people have printer-friendly version Well, we are going to have that, but we're also going to have a Braille printer-friendly version. So you can download a formatted Braille file and Braille that on a Braille printer or read it in your PacMate or Braille note.
As Daisy or as what?
No, as Braille.
Oh, just as Braille.
It'll be Braille. It'll have the charts done correctly. You know, sometimes you get crazy formatting if you just download something off the web.
Uh-huh.
But we will translate this in advance. It'll be a Duxbury-prepared file, and you'll be able to download this file and send it directly to your Braille printer. So there's no, it's not like we're abandoning Braille.
Sure. Give me the address that you go. Can you go now and sign up?
Not right now. But what you should do if you want to sign up is send an email to accessworld@afb.net. That's our email address.
Accessworld. Okay, go ahead.
accessworld@afb.net. And to check out the table of contents of the magazine, which you'll be able to read, you'll also get all the back issues starting in January. You can go to afb.org/accessworld.asp. Our website is org. Our email addresses are net. Don't be confused by that.
Okay. And you should go do that now. And if you do, then you'll get an announcement of when the first issue will be available?
That's right.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Very good, sir. I've been a subscriber since you started and appreciate your work and the magazine very much. And we thank you, Jay Leventhal from Access World Magazine, which is becoming a free magazine on the net sometime in January. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Well, we hope that gave you a little useful information. This show will be archived, or you can email the foundation or call the American Foundation of the Blind and find out more information. But it's becoming a free magazine as of January, which is a wonderful thing. It's a great magazine. You're going to love it. Thanks for listening to Blind Like Me. And we'll be back next week. Next week, I think we're doing a full 2 hours of cooking shows with Dale Campbell for Thanksgiving. I believe that is what is on schedule. So join us for those cooking shows. And thank you very much for listening to Blind Like Me. I'm Phil Parr. See you next week.